In this module, we're going to talk about psychology for survival and how to prevent post-traumatic stress disorder. These are two huge topics for survival and preparedness. And when I say huge, I mean they're very, very important. It can mean the difference between life and death more than any single item that you have with you or any bunch of items that you have with you. And fortunately, on that same note, what you've got in your head, you've got with you, whether you've got any supplies with you or not. So again, it's just an incredibly important topic. One neat thing about this module is that there's most of what we cover in here, you're going to be able to take action on immediately after we finish this, and you're going to own the information. You're going to be able to use it in the future with without a whole lot of training, without a whole lot of practice. Basically just knowing a few fundamentals. There are some things that you are going to want to practice, and we'll go over which of those things you do want to practice. So in survival, there's a rule of threes, and the rule of threes is that you can survive without food for 3 weeks, you can survive without water for 3 days, you can survive without air for 3 minutes, but there's many cases where you can only survive without a clear head for 3 seconds. And this is a huge issue. Let's take a few examples. One would be if you are underwater and you breathe in instead of holding your breath. That's a case where, boom, you've basically eliminated your chances of survival. Another is if you panic in a bad situation. Let's say you're somewhere where you need to balance, or you're high up off the ground, or even in the middle of a violent physical altercation. If you don't keep a clear head, you can be done very, very quickly. And another thing is, quite frankly, you can have a heart attack. And while you won't die immediately, essentially you'll be walking dead if you have a heart attack in a situation where you can't get outside help to take care of the situation. And this is just some of the reasons why psychology is so vital in a survival situation. Three keys to survival psychology are a positive yet realistic mental attitude, having set goals that you can follow to basically know that you have something to live for, and adequate sleep. Adequate sleep is huge. Now, when we talk about a positive and realistic mental attitude, the first thing I want to tell you to do is throw away your rose-colored glasses. They are not going to help you. If you are delusional, it doesn't help. If you're trapped in the middle of a blizzard and you keep telling yourself, oh, this is great, we're on a beach, it's 70 degrees or 80 degrees or 90 degrees, it's not going to help your situation. What you need to do is say, I'm in a blizzard. I don't have adequate supplies. If I don't take care of things quickly, I'm going to be in a world of hurt, so I better get moving. One of the things, there's a great book called The Survivor's Club, and in there he talks about how during Vietnam, one class of people who consistently died first in POW camps were the optimists. And the reason is it goes back to the rose-colored glasses and not having a firm grip on reality. And people would say things like, if I just make it till Thanksgiving, they're going to rescue us at Thanksgiving. And it would get them to Thanksgiving, but it wouldn't get them a week past Thanksgiving when rescue hadn't come. The people who did better were the ones who said, I'm just going to figure out how to make it through today, or I'm just going to figure out how to make it through this week. And not saying that rescue was going to come, but I'm just going to figure out how to make it through. And I'm going to do what I need to do. And I know I don't have a set end in sight, and so I better just pace myself. This is a marathon and not a sprint. And if I sprint towards Thanksgiving and there's no finish line, then I know that's not a good thing. So same thing with a survival situation. You just got to be realistic about your situation, accept it, and deal with it. One of the ways that you can do this is to focus on what you have, what you've got control over, and what you can do to affect change in your environment. If it's after an electromagnetic pulse and there are no electrical devices working, you've got to just accept reality. That's something you don't have control over. What you do have control over is your attitude, What you do have control over is what actions you take on a daily basis to improve your survivability. And another thing, which sounds so simple, and that's because it is to practice being thankful. It's very easy, and everyone knows this. If you're in a situation where you've got illness in your family, if you're in a situation where you've experienced a loss, if you've got relationship issues, if you've got financial issues, if you've got issues at work, it's very, very easy to focus on those and just let it drag you down and turn you into a negative, bitter person. And it's so important to develop the discipline of being thankful for what you do have. And I've talked with paraplegics and quadriplegics who practice this on a daily basis, and they're great people to be around because they're thankful for what they have. I've talked with people who are in chronic pain who are thankful for what they have. It doesn't change the fact that they're in chronic pain. It doesn't take away the pain, but it allows them to have a much fuller life by being thankful for what they do have. On goals, this is just such a huge thing. There's a story about a guy who, I believe it was in the Sonoran Desert. He was flying his airplane and crashed. And he survived a week or 10 days in the desert, walking through the desert with no supplies whatsoever. He should have been dead. There's no reason for him to have been alive. The reason that he lived was because he was in the middle of a divorce, and there was no way that he was going to give his soon-to-be ex-wife everything. He knew she was going to get half, but he just absolutely refused, and that fire inside kept him going. Now, that's not necessarily a good fire to have inside, and hopefully most of you don't have that fire inside, but you can have other fires inside. You can have family, you can have faith, you can have patriotism. Who knows what the reason is going to be for you? Something has to give you more reason to live than to let you give up, because things get rough. Things get rough in everyday life, and things get really rough in a survival situation or after a disaster. One great story that I love is about prisoners in Vietnam who practiced golfing in their minds while they were in their prisons. And what they would do is basically, and it sounds funny because it's been used as a punchline in so many movies, is they went to their happy place. They went to their favorite golf course in their mind and golfed it every single day in as much possible detail as they could give to the dream and goal. They imagined the colors, they imagined the smell, they imagined how the wind felt, they imagined having good shots, bad shots they had to recover from, everything. And interestingly enough, some of these guys, one in particular, did very, very well when he got out of the POW camp and came back to the United States and played golf, even though he hadn't touched an actual golf club in years. This is also called disassociation, and you want to be careful with that. When you disassociate and basically ignore the reality that you're in and create an alternative reality in your mind, it can be good or it can be bad. And you just want to keep things straight in your head of what reality is and what reality isn't. Another thing is you need to have, and we've talked about this before, SMART goals. You want to have specific goals. Goals that have a number attached to them are wonderful because it means that there is a concrete time when you achieve the goal. There is a concrete goal that you're getting to. You want it to be measurable. And again, numbers work great with this. I want to be X weight by X day, or I want to have X gallons of water stored up by X day, anything like that. Next thing is achievable. If you say, I want to have 20,000 gallons of water at my house by the end of the day today, and the only way that you have to get water is to transport it from a stream that's a mile away, and all you've got to transport it is buckets, it's not achievable. And the end result of that is, sure, you're shooting for the moon and you're setting crazy goals, but you're not going to achieve them. And pretty soon, your mind is going to realize that, and it isn't going to give any significance to the goals that you set because it knows, it's been conditioned to know that you don't achieve the goals that you set. Next thing is you want the goals to be realistic, and this goes along with being achievable. And finally, tangible, something that you can feel, touch, taste, smell. The goals need to be something that are you're absolutely positive when you've achieved them. The next thing is sleep. And a lot of people think that sleep is an indulgence. And they say things like, I'll sleep when I'm dead. Or warriors don't need sleep. Or we'll sleep when the battle's over. It's really pretty ridiculous, even though it's done continually. And I want to read you a quote from the book Ethical Standing, or actually it's from the article, The Ethical Standing for Commander Self-Care, called The Need for Sleep. It's time to critically re-examine our love affair with stoic self-denial, starting with the service academies. If an adversary can turn our commanders into sleepwalking zombies, from a moral point of view, the adversary has done nothing fundamentally different than destroying supplies of food, water, or ammunition. Such could be the outcome despite our best efforts to counter it. But we must stop doing it to ourselves and handing the enemy a dangerous and unearned advantage. Now, granted, this is for war fighting, but a lot of lessons that our troops are learning in war we can apply to survival situations, and sleep is one of them. If we go without food or water, we are going to perform at a diminished capacity. If we go without sleep, we're going to perform at a diminished capacity. And it doesn't matter what you do to try and get around it. The fact is you need sleep to perform at optimal levels. Some of the things that it impacts are judgment, immune function, the ability to heal, the speed that your brain can think and the speed that your muscles can twitch, flex, react. It takes your brain longer to realize that stuff is happening, or latency. And it takes longer for you to react once your brain does realize what's happening. It affects complex thoughts and motor skills. It affects memory, and it affects your ability to learn. And this is perhaps one of the most important things, it affects your mood and interpersonal skills. Frankly, yeah, you get to where, everyone knows this, you get to where you're not nice to be around because all these different things are being affected and you just can't function with other people as efficiently as you know you can. Now, all of these things are bad from a survival standpoint. If you get into a post-disaster situation where you need to be firing on all cylinders, you don't want your judgment hampered. You don't want your immune function hampered. You don't want your ability to heal hampered. You need all of these things working at 100%. And the way that you do that is you get enough sleep. And it goes directly against what has become common thought. Common thought is you stay awake and push through. And if you sleep, you're weak. And in reality, that's just bunk. Real life doesn't work that way. And study after study after study after study has been done to try and get around this limitation that the human body has, and it just can't be done. Militaries have done it. Executives have done it. Special operations forces have tried to get around this limitation of sleep, and it just doesn't work. There's been some people who have promoted being able to sleep 4 hours a night and function at 100%, and in reality, it just doesn't work out. There are a few people who are able to do that, but the vast majority cannot. The vast majority of people start having shortcomings in all of these areas when they start cutting back on sleep or cutting back on quality sleep. Now, let me put this to you another way. Do you want to try and make it through a survival situation while you're drunk or while you're sober? Another way to look at it is, if you're partnered up with somebody after a disaster, do you want them to be drunk or sober? And here's why I ask this. If you go 24 hours without sleep, it's equivalent to a 0.08% blood alcohol level, which is legal intoxication in, I believe, every state in the U.S. And it's at or higher than the legal intoxication limits around the world. So it just think about that as you're trying to push through and do an all-nighter or push through and get stuff done. At some point, you're going to have to make up for it. It's you may as well go out and have a few drinks and try and get stuff done as go 24 hours without sleep. Now, the other thing that people do is they try and cut back a couple hours a night, saying that it won't hurt them. And in reality, this catches up also, and it catches up quite quickly. And just cutting out a couple hours of sleep a night for 2 to 3 weeks also puts you in that legally drunk category. So I just want to, I cannot stress enough how important it is to get sleep and how important it is on your performance, your physical performance and your mental performance, not only in a disaster, but before a disaster. You know, what this works out to, being legally drunk puts you at 50 to 70% effectiveness. And so if you're going with 6 hours of sleep at night, if you switch, if you want a really, really quick way to get a 20 to 50% increase in productivity, all you need to do is sleep a couple hours a night. And you will lose a couple hours a day, but the hours that you are awake, you'll be so much more efficient. It's just absolutely amazing the difference that it makes. All right, so one of the main ways that people try to overcome the need for sleep is with stimulants. And long term, this is it just doesn't work. Short term, there are some benefits to it if you're trying to stay awake for a 24-hour period of time, 48-hour period of time. But once you start getting beyond that, the brain and the body just need sleep. But I want to cover a few of these because there's a lot of talk about them, and they're very widely used and abused, and it's good to know some of the background on them. Nicotine is very ineffective for staying awake, and one of the proofs of that is the number of people who fall asleep smoking and start house fires. The next one is caffeine, and caffeine does work very well, especially if you're trying to stay awake if you're trying to do an all-nighter and stay awake. It'll help keep you relatively effective, not incredibly effective, but more so than if you don't do anything. But the downside is that it has a pretty significant impact on the adrenal system and blood sugar levels. For a lot of people, they end up having less energy over a 4 to 6 hour period with caffeinated drinks than if they wouldn't have done anything at all. And a lot of the reason for that is because of sugar that they have with their caffeine. But it's just not a real clean drug to use. There's a lot of downsides to it. A lot of people in the U.S. use caffeine. And I'm not saying it's horrible to use. It's just very easy to abuse, and it's very easy to take it in quantities and timing that hurt other systems in your body. Another drug that has been used for years by military and civilians for staying awake for long periods of time is dextroamphetamine, or dexedrine. It does its job well. It does keep you awake and keeps you effective. There are, of course, a few problems with them. One is addiction. It is something that you can get addicted to. Another is it affects mood and interpersonal skills. And kind of the way it does that is it makes you very effective at tasks and kind of limits your ability to understand the human element of decisions. So, yes, you can get stuff done, but yes, you might make decisions that hurt people around you and cause long-term consequences. It's a trade-off that you kind of need to understand before you decide that you want to use it to be able to stay awake for 24, 48 hours straight. Another one is Adderall. Several of the amphetamine-based ADD and ADHD drugs. Adderall is basically a combination of four amphetamines, including dextroamphetamine. It has a lot of the same problems. There's a crash at the end. It causes the relationship issues. It causes hyper-focus to the expense of the human element. You still need sleep afterwards. If you stay awake for 2 days on it and miss two sleep cycles, third sleep cycle, when you actually do go to sleep, you may not need to sleep enough to replace the 2 nights that you missed, but you're going to have to sleep a significant additional amount. So it isn't something that you can use on a sustained basis to avoid sleep. You can use it to stay awake, and which is what some people do. You really can't use it for extended periods of time for avoiding sleep. Now, one of the more popular drugs right now, for alertness and being able to work for long periods of time is modafinil or Provigil. And it's in use not only by executives in a lot of companies, especially tech companies, pilots, and lots of different military personnel who were over in Iraq and Afghanistan. And this is non-addictive, which is very good, but there's also the problem with this, with that the other ones have, and that is that you can't just avoid sleep. Your brain has to have sleep to regenerate. You need it to replenish hormone levels. You need it to replenish other chemicals in your brain, and you just can't avoid it. You can postpone it, and if you're going to use any of these, this is probably the cleanest one to use with the fewest side effects, but it will not eliminate the need for sleep. You still need to get good, solid sleep. So what is the solution? The best solution is actually sleeping. And you can do this with naps. You can do it with a solid 7 to 9 hours of sleep at night. If you can't get a solid night of sleep and need to nap, there's some tricks to taking naps. One of them is to sleep when your body wants to sleep. And a lot of times that's going to be early afternoon and early morning. Another thing is to be aware of is that if you sleep for much more than 20 or 30 minutes at a time, you're going to have what's called sleep inertia. And everyone's familiar with this when you wake up from a long nap and you're groggy and you just can't get going and can't clear out the cobwebs. So what you want to do is if you have a choice between taking an hour and a half nap during the day or 3 20 or 30 minute naps, take 3 20 or 30 minute naps, because if you need to wake up and perform right away, you'll be able to with a 20 or 30 minute nap, whereas you won't be able to with a longer one. Now, this doesn't eliminate the need for sleep, but it does improve performance and lets you go longer periods of time with less sleep. Now, ideally, you're going to have four factors in place when you sleep. Actually, six. I'm going to cover four here. Well, I'll just tell you the two that I don't have written down here are proper hydration. Ideally, you don't want to be starving. You don't want to be hungry. You don't want to have low blood sugar. But other than that, the conditions that you're looking for are a dark room, a quiet room, a comfortable temperature, and safe, so that you can actually switch your mind off and go to sleep. It's really important to have a dark, quiet room. And we use blackout shades at home to keep our bedroom as pitch black as possible, and it makes a huge difference in the quality of sleep that we get. Now, one thing that everyone knows is that even if you've got ideal situations, when you're going through a stressful situation or when you've recently been through a stressful situation, your mind races. And I call those the demons that keep you from sleeping. And they may be from past engagements, if you're a soldier or a policeman or do contract security or other things that have put you in life-threatening situations. Or it could be from fire and EMS personnel or just anyone who's seen a traumatic event that they think about again and again. And going through a survival situation, there's normally a trauma that has happened at the beginning of it to put you in the survival situation. And then there's normally more traumas on top of that. And it could be as simple as a fire burning down your house and most everything that you own. And some things are replaceable with insurance and many things aren't. But it's important to know how to turn these off without using drugs or alcohol, because drugs or alcohol will let you shut your eyes and keep them shut, but it won't necessarily let you get the sleep that you need in the deep stages of sleep that help the brain and body regenerate. Now, one of the ways to do this is with free writing. And free writing is basically just sitting down with a pen and a pad of paper, or sitting down at your computer and getting all of the thoughts in your brain out on paper. And it could be the things that are bothering you, it could be good things, it could be bad things, just whatever is front and center of your mind, write it down. And then next to it, write down the feelings that you've got about it and the thoughts. And just this process of writing stuff out and organizing your thoughts in such a way that you can write them down makes a huge difference. It's amazing in its simplicity and effectiveness. Next thing is also very simple. It's called deep breathing. And basically what you do is breathe in using your diaphragm. And when I say using your diaphragm, what I mean is you want your lungs to expand downwards, not your chest to expand upwards. And so when you're, one way to tell if you're doing this is your belly will go outward when you're doing deep breathing. Many people, even in the middle of a stressful situation, if they lay down and do 10 to 20 deep breaths where they breathe in for a three count, breathe out for a three count, breathe in for a three count, breathe out for a three count, they'll fall asleep without anything else. And it'll be a very good sleep. And one of the reasons for this is because your brain's focusing on the breathing. Another thing is deep breathing oxygenates your mind and your muscles, and it gives you a state of well-being and kind of lowers your defenses and lets you get to sleep. Another thing is meridian tapping, and I'm going to get into that because this is a biggie. It's very, very effective, and it's somewhat controversial. And I'm going to start out by saying that this is one of the craziest whack job hokey things I've ever seen. And I really don't want to talk about it because it's one of the craziest whack job hokey things I've ever seen. The reason I'm going to talk about it and the reason I want you to know about it is because of how well it works, regardless of the fact that it doesn't look like it should. It looks kind of ridiculous. Two popular names for this are EFT, or Emotional Freedom Technique, and TFT, or Thought Field Technique. Both of these have aspects to them that I don't necessarily like. If it's hokey to start with, there's some parts of it that are very hokey that I just won't do. And I have not found any lessening in the effectiveness by getting rid of the very, very hokey parts of it. Basically, what you do is you tap on meridians, and these are acupuncture and acupressure points, and there's no magic behind it. There's I don't necessarily agree with chi or that stuff, and if you do, that's fine. That's just not something that I agree with. But there's several basic sequences that you can do, and here is a very basic way to do it. And I'm gonna, you don't need to write any of this down. You're going to have a copy of the presentation, and I'm also going to recommend a couple resources for you. But what you do is you focus on what's bothering you and rate the intensity from 1 to 10. I'll give you an example. Let's say there was a terrorist attack, and that's not specific enough. What you need to focus on is the consequences of that terrorist attack that are specifically bothering you, like you lost a good friend, or the economy crashed, or the electrical grid got shut down. Whatever it happens to be, you want to get as focused and granular as possible. And you may end up doing this a few times for a few different things. But then what you do is you tap points mostly on your face and head for 5 to 10 seconds each in order. And I'm going to tap next to the microphone so you can kind of get an idea of the tempo. It's fairly rapidly. And again, you want to do it for 5 to 10 seconds. And what you want to do is you want to do tap the eyebrow on the inside by the bridge of the nose, the side of the eye. So here's the eyebrow, the side of the eye, under the eye on the bone, under the nose, and a soft spot right below the collarbone, about an inch inside the sternum, under the arm, and then karate chop. And you can do that with the karate chop point of one hand hitting the karate chop point of your other hand. Now, again, it does seem quite odd. Again, I was very hesitant to talk about this because it's not believable to me, but it works. I've used it myself several times over almost a decade, and it works. It works for me, and it's worked for every single person who I've suggested it to. And if I wouldn't have the great history and experience with it that I do, I wouldn't even think about sharing it with you. While you're doing that, after you do the karate chop, you want to go back to the point that's under the collarbone and 1 inch outside the sternum and keep tapping on that. While you tap on that, you want to look down into the right and up and to the left. And so it's a diagonal. And when you do that, basically what you're going to do is you're going to start doing X's with your eyes while your eyes are closed. From down and to the right to up and to the left, and then down and to the left and up and to the right. After you're done with that, you're going to roll your eyes in one direction, counterclockwise, and then roll them in the other direction, clockwise. Then hum 5 seconds of any tune. Happy birthday, Mary had a little lamb, whatever you want it to be. Count out loud to five, and then hum another 5 to 10 seconds of the song. Again, I can't say this enough how odd it seems. I can't say it enough how wacky it seems. I can't say it enough how much I don't understand how this works, but I know it works. And it has worked for tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people. And it's just, if you try it once, in my case, I didn't believe it would work, and it worked. In most of the people that I've introduced it to, they didn't believe it would work. It worked. You don't have to believe in it for it to work. It just does. And here's some of the finer points of it. You want to focus on the specific thing that's causing you anxiety or causing you to not sleep or whatever it is. Many of the people who teach emotional freedom technique and TFT want you to say or suggest that you say affirmations while you're doing the tapping, while you're doing the EFT. And it's just, I can't bring myself to do it. It's too corny, and it works without using them. The affirmations they want you to say are something like, even though my house burned down, I deeply and completely love myself. While it's true that I do love myself, I don't have a need to say it. The technique works without doing that, so I've just completely stopped doing that for the last several years. And I've talked with instructors who have also stopped doing that because it just didn't feel right to them. What you're going to find is if you're at an 8 to 10 intensity on whatever's bothering you and you use the EFT techniques, you're going to find that it immediately, within a couple minutes, drops down to sometimes a 1 or a 2, but at least a 4 to a 6. And you can do it again and drop it down to a 1 or a 2, and in many cases, go from having something that's eating away at you and keeping you up for hours at night to being able to go to sleep right away. And so this is just incredibly valuable. And other times you're going to have multiple issues that you're dealing with and wrestling with, and this can help you take care of multiple issues by just working through one issue, then work through the next issue, then work through the next issue until your brain is quieted down enough that you can drift off to sleep. And again, I don't know why this works. Furthermore, I don't believe it should work. I just know it does, and it's meant being able to go to sleep without drugs or alcohol for many, many friends of mine who have dealt with very traumatic things. If you're a soldier, it's not an uncommon thing to have dealt with nasty, nasty stuff. This is a way that I've been able to help a lot of friends sleep at night without, again, without drugs or alcohol, and do it in minutes. And so it's very, very powerful. Personally, I've used it for dealing with stressful issues, stresses before events. I've used it before free diving to slow my heart rate. I've used it before doing precision shooting. I've used it when I've had allergic reactions to slow my heart rate and actually slow down or stop the histamine response. It wasn't an anaphylactic type allergic reaction, but it was definitely an allergic reaction that had predictable results that I was able to counteract by using EFT. And another neat thing that I application that I found for it was triggering endorphin releases on multi-hour runs. Normally, it's called runner's high. Normally, it just kind of happens or doesn't happen, and it's not very predictable. And by using EFT, you can actually make it much more predictable. And once you get that endorphin release, for me anyhow, I can run extra hours. So it's it can be a huge, huge advantage or benefit when you're doing endurance events. A site that I want to suggest that you go to is eft.mercola.com. They do talk about saying affirmations. They have a slightly different basic recipe than what I talked to you about, but the fundamentals are all there. There are a million ways to skin this cat, and a lot of it depends on who you're talking to, whether they're trying to brand EFT for their particular purposes, or whether they're just trying to tell you the most effective way to make it work. I don't really have a horse in this race. I just know it works, and I like it a lot, and know that it's helped several friends of mine, and I know that it can help you as well. The next thing is post-traumatic stress disorder. Pretty much any time you have a disaster or you have found yourself in a survival situation, it has caused a psychological trauma, which if you don't deal with it, can disable you. It can take you back to what I was talking about with needing drugs or alcohol to go to sleep at night. It can affect your day-to-day life. And there's several names for it. There have been several names throughout the year: shell shock, battle fatigue, PTSD, etc. They're basically the same thing. It's undealt with traumas to the brain, and not physical traumas, but psychological traumas. And you can have them not only from combat. Combat's the most common exposure that we have to the terminology, but also from just an accident, a car accident, or some other accident where you get hurt, or somebody around you gets hurt, or you see somebody die or get hurt very badly after disaster or after a loss, either of a loved one or of items. And the post-traumatic stress disorder can kick in immediately, 6 weeks later, 6 months later, 18 weeks later, 18 months later. There's different time frames when it can kick in. So it's something that you want to get in front of and get control of before it sneaks up on you if you've experienced a traumatic event. And fortunately, it's very simple to do this. And in fact, it can help reduce PTSD incidents by up to 80%. And this has been shown on studies of first responders after mass casualty incidents. It's as simple as writing and talking. And basically, what you need to do, or what you want to do, is organize your thoughts and feelings about what happened enough that you can put them down on paper or talk to someone about it. It doesn't have to be incredibly readable. It doesn't have to be presentation quality. The big thing is you need to put words to what happened so that the mind can deal with it. And sometimes doing this, like I talked about with sleeping, it can mean the difference between sleeping with or without drugs or sleeping at all. So just a simple act of writing and talking makes a huge difference. Another thing that I want to suggest, if you're interested in going further with this, is getting CISM certified. And it's Critical Incident Stress Management. And CISM is basically psychological first aid for post-disaster incidents. It doesn't mean that you're a doctor. It doesn't mean you're a psychiatrist. It doesn't mean you're a psychologist. It doesn't mean you're a counselor. Taking it to physical trauma, it doesn't mean you're a doctor. It doesn't mean you're a paramedic. It doesn't mean you're an EMT. This is first aid. It's not the heavy lifting. It's the initial work. And sometimes first aid is all people need. And sometimes if you don't get first aid, you bleed out. Sometimes first aid is what you need to survive until you get to a higher level of care. And it's the same thing with psychological incidents. Sometimes it's first aid is all you need. Sometimes you need a significant amount more. You can do a search on Google for CISM training or critical incident stress management training and find where it's being offered in your area. And a lot of times it's going to be through churches or other entities that are dealing with disaster recovery. Now, this is just such a force multiplier to understand all of this. People's efficiency, productivity, and level of judgment is affected by their psychological state. And so, if you're in a group of six people, would you rather be teamed up with five lifeless, energy-sucking, emotional vampires, or would you rather be with five positive, can-do people in a survival situation? Which one you're with can easily determine whether you live or die. It's just that important. And so one of the things is, before an incident, you want to try and pick out people who are positive, can-do people. The other thing is, it's incredibly valuable to be able to alter other people's psychological states. What I mean by this is, focus on what influences your mood and then figure out how you can use that knowledge to influence others, to try and take them from being energy-sucking, emotional vampires to positive, can-do people who are going to increase your survivability. Some of the quick and easy things are watching blood sugar levels of the people around you, watching their eating habits and whether they're eating sugary foods or healthy foods, whether they're getting enough sleep at night, getting them to set and talk about goals, getting them to practice the art of gratitude, encouraging people and respecting people and letting them know that you appreciate them and respect them and that you think that they're key and vital for your group's survival. And by doing this, and now it's much easier to pull people down than it is to lift them up, but by combining these factors, the food, sleep, goals, gratitude, encouragement, and respect, you have a better than decent shot of turning someone around and making them a true asset to your team. This is something, of course, that you can practice immediately. You can practice it with family members, friends, coworkers, etc. And it's not natural. It really isn't. It's a discipline, and it's something you've got to practice and do. But it's worth it because it makes the sun brighter, it makes the days go by better, and it makes bad times much easier to go through. And so that's it for this module. Again, there'll be resources in the members area. Let me know if you have any questions by contacting me through the members area.